Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace here with you on a very eventful week. Capping off right here before we face the 49ers for our first home opener in the preseason. And obviously the biggest event of the week had to be the signing of Evan Mathis. Left guard should take over for Max Garcia, who has been playing well. But when you have the opportunity to add a two-time Pro Bowler and one-time All-Pro, I think, no offense to a rookie, but you got to give up that spot.
Well, it's interesting to look back at the last month and see how the Broncos have viewed their offensive line and attempts to upgrade it. Because if you recall before the start of training camp, as I'm sure you do, Broncos had Jake Long in, and he's a veteran, some Pro Bowls. There's at least one All-Pro notch on his belt. But at the same time, he's got significant injury concerns, so you're not sure how long he can last and what he can deliver. Mathis had an MCL injury last year, but that was early. He came back, played well after recovering from it, and was in the Pro Bowl, despite playing just 9 games last year. So even though Mathis is older than Long, there's less of an injury concern. So if you're the Broncos, you're saying, okay, we've got right now a left flank of Tyson Brielle at left tackle, Max Garcia at left guard, Matt Paradis at center. None of them have played a regular season snap. So you want to get more experience somewhere. Where are you going to get it, and who provides the biggest upgrade over what you have right now? And even though Max Garcia has played well, and Tyson Brielle has certainly come on, and he's had a trial by fire going up against guys like Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware every day, but he's getting better, and he's adapting. But if you looked just solely at Jake Long and Evan Mathis and said, okay, who's going to be the bigger upgrade? Mathis, because right, he's playing the best ball of his career right at this point. You look at the last 4 years. I mean, if you go by the ProFootballFocus.com rankings, he's been number one or number two at guard 4 years running. So it's not a recent thing with him. He's had he missed off-season work because he got cut by Philadelphia, so he's fresh. He didn't have to go through training camp. And I mean, it's nothing bad on Max Garcia, and I asked John Elway about Garcia on Thursday, and they still see him as a long-term starter. Yeah. They're still very high on Max Garcia, but it was a chance to provide the biggest possible upgrade to the offensive line. And yeah, you've still got a young unit because you've still got two guys out there in Paradis and Cimbrello who are first-time starters, are going to get their first snaps in the regular season in week one. But you have two recent All-Pro guards. Mathis and Luis Vasquez were the first-team All-Pro guard tandem back in 2013. And I think Vasquez might have been a Pro Bowler last year if he'd stayed at right guard and had not been moved to right tackle. So I challenge anyone to say, okay, who's got a better set of guards in the league? If you've got two recent All-Pros up front, those are two good pillars to build around, and you figure they're going to help make the players around them better, that Mathis is going to make things a little bit easier for Tyson Brielle at left tackle. So it's just a good pickup, and certainly you like the Broncos' chances of winning and protecting Peyton Manning better today than you did earlier this week. And one more thing, if you look at Manning and the way he plays, he gets the ball out quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where Faster do a lot
than anyone else?
Right. So most of the sacks that he takes tend to come up the middle from the A and the B gaps. They're not coming from around the flanks. So what better way than to shore up one of those interior spots with a guy who is fresh, appears to be in good shape, and just as importantly, knows a comparable scheme in terms of what the blockers are asked to do, what he ran in Philadelphia. There's a lot of zone principles involved in Chip Kelly's offense for the offensive line. It's going to be a pretty smooth transition for him, I think.
It looks like they might be actually setting themselves up for a late season run, given the rest they've been giving the veterans. But with Mathis missing a lot of camp and a lot of OTAs, he obviously hasn't put in a lot of stress on his body as far as football work.
And he's in good shape, too. Yeah. He runs a training facility down in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Give it a little plug in his...
I'm pretty confident that he's in shape, given what his life's work is outside of football.
And I guess one of the things that a lot of people have been talking about over the offseason is how much the cohesiveness kind of builds during the offseason. So it might take them a little bit to kind of get to know how he works between the line, between the linemen. But at the same time, he's a smart guy. He's been in the league for a decade. He knows what's going to be expected of him and how to kind of handle it. So I think maybe if things kind of take a little bit to kind of build initially, they could be really set up for like a late season run.
And he wants to be here. He probably could have gotten more money going somewhere else, but he wants to be here. He thought this was the best chance for a championship. And also I think scheme certainly helped his decision. Is it just going to be a 1 year thing for Evan Mathis? Seems likely, but you never know. But at the same time, you know, the Broncos did have cap space. I mean, they had over $8 million of cap room before they made this move. So they still have that emergency fund, those emergency funds to go and add someone in a pinch, as inevitably happens in over the course of a season. They're not going to be paying for Evan Mathis's contract down the road. They're able to take it all right now based on the room they had. So the notion that the Broncos didn't have the cap space to bring in a guy like Mathis was fallacious.
One of the things you were talking to me about the other night was how guards, especially as they kind of get older, their primes come a little bit later than most NFL players. Mm-hmm. You said right about 33, you know, 32. Those kind
if they
guys
stay healthy, that's
impact.
The key thing. Like the chain reaction of what has happened with the Broncos at guard the last few years really started with Chris Cooper's injury on New Year's Day of 2012 in the regular season finale against Kansas City. Cooper was in his sixth season. He'd gotten a nice long-term contract extension going into 2010, and he was one of the league's better guards and was just at the cusp of starting to receive that recognition. Sometimes it really takes guards a while to get noticed as far as Pro Bowls and All Pros go. Like Evan Mathis, you know, didn't make All Pro the Pro Bowl until 2013. Yet he'd been delivering good to great play going back to 2010 in Cincinnati when he really started to emerge. So Cooper was just hitting his stride. You know, the Broncos had the leading rushing game in the league in the 2011 season. And obviously, you had Tim Tebow, who was more likely to run than pass, and Willis McGahee, he had a Pro Bowl season. But give credit to the guys up front, and Chris Cooper was really an anchor of that offensive line and looked like he was going to settle in for a long career there. And then he fractured his ankle, and when he came back, he wasn't the same. And you know, what's happened to the Broncos at the guard position since then in some way is an extension of trying to adapt to the new reality that faced them once one of their pillars up front, and certainly their touchstone guard, was lost to injury and the reaction to it.
And moving towards the other big roster move this week, which was the release of Connor Barth and basically the effective handing over the kicking position to Brandon McManus, who will be handling kickoffs and place kicking. So obviously they've been really impressed with his consistency, as they've been saying the past couple of days, but really you were able to dig in to see why he was, you know, able to change up and become a more consistent kicker than what we saw last year.
He talked about how he removed what he called a jab step from his windup, which basically has like a little extra half step. And, you know, to put it in layman's terms, when you take out that extra step, that's basically it's like taking out another step, another piece of motion. And that the more steps and the more motion you have, the more places you can go wrong. That's why if you play basketball and you're shooting free throws, it's like, you know, concentrate. You know, they tell you bend your knees, because if you bend your knees and you keep everything up top fairly static, that's less. You have less that can go awry before you put the ball in the air. So that's really helped him. Just small sample size last 2 days, but this week against San Francisco, he was 19 for 19 on various field goals from field goal attempts from 28 to 50 yards. Now, game time is a different situation because you're not kicking rapidly in succession the way you are in a field goal period, but certainly that's more consistency from McManus than we saw at any point at any point last year. And I think the fact that he's truncated his windup has an awful lot to do with it. And of course, he has such an actually strong leg, and you know, generates a lot of torque, that there's still a lot of power behind his kicks, even though he's taken that extra step off of it. You know, I was noticing when I was up a few flights up, mm-hmm, on one of the video towers, mm-hmm, and I was watching his kicks and that kicks during Thursday's practice, and it really gave me a sense for how much height he gets on them. And he's hitting from 45, 50 yards, and when they clear the crossbar, the football is almost at the height of the upright. It's like, holy smokes, he is just killing it.
If he took off that half step, which is, I'm guessing, that allows you to unleash a little bit more power, but taking that off and to be able to hit a 70-yarder, like, mm-hmm, practice, whatever, but to be able to hit 70 yards away is just incredible.
Yeah, he's got a cannon, and on kickoffs, we've seen that. He's also worked a little bit on placement and hang time this summer, in addition to just blasting the ball. Now, if the Broncos need him to send the ball flying out of the end zone, he can do that much more often than not. But they've tried to emphasize, it's a point of emphasis from special teams coordinator Jody Camillus, getting the ball in manageable space, which is basically kicking toward the sideline, outside between the numbers and the sideline. And maybe that's going to come down in the end zone. Maybe that's going to come down at the 1 yard line or so. But if it comes down in the end zone, you kind of force the opponent to make a decision. And ever since the kickoffs were moved to the 35 yard line from the 30, you get the sense that that teams are so itching to return, and returners are, you know, they're so amped to try and make a play happen, that they're more likely to return the ball out of the end zone than they were before. I would have to go and really dive into the numbers. So when you put that ball outside the numbers and you force a team to start from the corner, that really diminishes the chances for a big return, and oftentimes means that the Broncos are able to get the returner inside the 20-yard line, which has happened a few times in the last couple of games when on McManus's kickoffs that he's gotten it outside in the end zone or close to it, and he's got enough hang time on it and he's got enough placement on it to where the Broncos have been able to get down there, do a great job in coverage, and next thing you know, the opponent's starting from the 14-yard line. So he's a weapon on kickoffs in multiple ways. We see his accuracy on placed kicks. You know, certainly the Broncos hope they've found their long-term guy. I think they just might have.
I really like that he changed things up once they made that first move to release, mm-hmm, him. He took that time to improve his craft and kind of make the changes that he'd wanted to make for a while, and now it pays off. I just thought that was really kind of a cool...
If we're not always trying to get better at what we do, then what's the point?
True enough.
You know, it's as true at work, it's as true in our personal life as it is in place kicking. And give him credit for understanding that he needed to improve on what he did. But some of that is also just being around. He was in the Colts camp. He was in the Giants camp. Certainly with the Colts, he was exposed to, you know, a great kicker in Adam Vinatieri, who knows all the tricks. And Connor Barth, who was released this week and then very quickly signed with Tampa Bay. You know, Barth offered some pointers to him as well.
Coming home.
Yep. And Barth became a friend and mentor to McManus, and I think was a big part of his success as well. It's actually cool to see, like, how the kicking fraternity in this sport works.
Yeah.
You know, and you could tell that Brandon was bummed to lose Connor.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, Connor was happy for Brandon, and Connor's happy to get another shot in Tampa Bay. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. I know I'll be pulling for him.
Yeah, me too. We're getting ready for a new game this week, 49ers. We've seen a lot of them in practice. And traditionally, the third game of the preseason is the one where you see the most of what the team will look like in the regular season as far as lineups and all that. Broncos will not be able to show that because Evan Mathis is still working to get back. He'll be optimally ready by the first game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Emmanuel Sanders also working to get back, so he won't be out there. But basically, I think one of the more interesting parts is that we'll actually be able to get the kind of full linebacking core together for this game,
mm-hmm.
which
about
we haven't
snaps.
Seen in 10 months, 11 months.
Yeah, Danny Trevathan is going to get roughly the same run as Brandon Marshall did last week in Houston. So there'll be a period of time, probably in the second quarter, where Marshall is running alongside Todd Davis and Steven Johnson. But still, huge step forward for Danny Trevathan. He's amped. If anything, he may have to check himself to make sure he's not too amped. Because I remember how excited he was when he got back on the field in San Diego, last season. He came off injured reserve, and then he got hurt pretty quickly. I'm not saying that his excitement had anything to do with getting injured, but certainly, it probably didn't help.
Right.
So I think he's got to consciously try to contain himself and kind of just focus on the game and not his return. But yeah, it's a big deal, and now you're finally going to see the Broncos defense as it was intended. And actually, we'll probably be the last time you see that defense as it was intended, because I doubt the starters are going to play against in the preseason finale next week, and then we won't see Derek Wolfe for four games.
I think we,
because of his suspension.
Do you think we'd see Trevathan for the fourth game if he see if he gets a little bit more?
I don't. If you've got nothing but backups out there for the most part, I don't think you risk it. And he's had a lot of snaps with the first team in practice. He's had he's had full practice runs now for a couple of weeks,
so I might as well just
. I don't think that's necessary. I mean, we're not gonna BS you. Y'all know what the last preseason game is.
Yeah,
y'all know what you're going to see. It would seem a bit short sighted to put Danny Trevathan out there.
Yeah,
for that game. And. And you can keep monitoring him throughout the regular season. You go back to last year when Chris Harris Jr. and Von Miller were coming off torn ACLs, and they got breathers in the first few games before they were fully up to speed. And maybe you'll see that with Danny Trevathan as well. It helps that Todd Davis has gotten a lot of work with the first team over the offseason and then early in training camp, so he knows what he's doing in the huddle. He has the command that you expect of an inside linebacker that's helping call the defense and set the defense before the snap. So that confidence in Todd Davis, I think, will allow Danny Trevathan to get any rest he needs as he continues to get back to 100%.
One of the things, I guess I kind of want to start off here in that same line about the fourth preseason game is the big topic that's been going around this week after the ACL tear to Jordy Nelson is the preseason slate too long? Is it unnecessary?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an argument against the preseason. College football seems to get by just fine without one.
Yeah.
An argument for the preseason.
However, is that not a fallacy? Because what if they did have a couple games to kind of get up to speed or something?
Would it improve the quality?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
I don't know.
We don't know.
It is unnecessary for them, at least, because we all seem to enjoy those games. Huh?
Yeah, it seems like the product is okay.
Yeah.
Without preseason, the value of it, frankly, is in
the
getting
depth.
Game evaluation of your younger guys.
Yeah.
That's to me that's the greatest value it has.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of value if you're trying to see maybe what a seventh round pick or some kind of lower down rookie is going to show, like a first rounder even with Shane Ray.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really interesting to see how he's come along after missing a lot of OTAs.
And really, the other thing, back in the day, there was NFL Europe / Europa
mm-hmm.
as an alternate way to develop players, and you could get game film on them. Without that, preseason's it for a lot of these guys. It's the only chance, if you're on the back end of the roster, to show what you can do so that there's increased value for them there.
You know, I had a Madden game, when maybe like Madden 05, and they included the NFL Europe teams on there, which was so ridiculous because, like, you'd have these NFL teams that were ranked like 90 out of 191.
And these guys are like 55
or 30. Yeah, they're like, it's like, why include them if you're just going to...
Take it as a challenge, though. Could you play an NFL Europe team against an NFL team?
Right, yeah, you could.
So you could have the Rhine Fire taking on the Denver Broncos.
Right,
take that as a challenge. Play that game. How good are you at Madden? If you can beat the Broncos, or if it was Madden 05, the Patriots are probably the best team on that game because based on the 04 season.
I think so, right?
No, it actually would have... Yeah, that's right, it would have been. So Patriots are the best team on the game. Take that challenge. Be Rhine. Be the Cologne Centurions or the Hamburg Sea Devils and play the Patriots and take them down. The greatest upset of all time in NFL history, even though it's not real.
But the thing is, like, with the NCAA football games, you could take, like, a University of Idaho and build them up with, like, recruiting. But I don't think you could play, like, at the franchise mode. You couldn't, like, build up the Centurions and kind of have them move up to the NFL league.
Yeah. I used to always, on Madden, get rid of one team and start an expansion team of my own.
Where? And what were they?
The Raleigh Rottweilers is my typical name. Because I couldn't simply add a franchise in an implausible place. I couldn't say, oh, I'm going to put a team in Tarpon Springs, Florida, population 15,000. No, in my own mind, I'm like, okay, what's a market that if it had an NFL team could potentially support it? And I always settled on Raleigh because a lot of my family's from around there. And Rottweilers, I just went for the alliteration.
Yeah, when in doubt, go for the what sounds good.
And there's not really, I mean, we don't really have a good canine nickname in the NFL.
It's really just the Browns use
the dog. So I thought, how about, you know. And I just kind of went through dog breeds, and I settled on Rottweilers because of the alliterative qualities.
Stunning lack of dogs. Stunning. No dogs in many major sports.
Well, I'll give you a possibility. If London ever gets an NFL team, I advocate that they should be initially called London AFC, London American Football Club. And there's actually a tradition of AFC Association Football Club being on the handle of some clubs over in England, like Bradford City. But if they decided to go the nickname route, Bulldogs would be my choice.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking Corgis because that's like the Queen's favorite dog. Plus,
we had the gift this week, your gift of the Corgi this week, yes.
Well, everyone loves Corgis.
That's probably why it's not a good nickname for an NFL team.
Oh, yeah. Who
wants to everyone loves Bulldogs. No, I love Bulldogs.
See, you can get away with, like, because Bulldogs are so rough and tough.
Yes, they're...
If you say, oh, that was a brutal hit on the Corgis, you like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Bulldogs, you can do that.
So, yeah, that's maybe the next time I play Madden, I do that, I will be the London Bulldogs.
I really want to get the new Madden because... Christine, when Madden came here to scan all the guys' faces or whatever, this was months ago, she was there covering it, you know, we did a little gallery whole thing, and she was joking around, and she sat in the chair, and they, like, scanned her face, and she was like, I was just kidding, and they're like, oh, you're going to be in the game in like, the stands. So, apparently, our own Christine Williamson is somewhere to be found in the stands, the virtual stands of
with or without the glasses?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
We'll have to find out. I don't have an Xbox anymore. It died on me in about maybe 2011.
Yeah, and I may not see it because I tend to just download the iPad version so I can have something to take with me on a plane and play.
Right.
So, and I take enough device. So I don't need to go. Buy another handheld gaming device. I just stick my iPad.
But for any of those Snapchat fans who have seen Christine, take a look on your Madden games and see if you can find her somewhere in the stands.
And we know they're out there because we heard them at NRG Stadium. last Saturday.
Oh yeah, yeah. She got some shout outs from the crowd there as we were providing security for the BTV live show.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I am still completely unemerged in the Snapchat. I don't have one or anything, but
neither do I.
People love it apparently. So. However that works.
People love a lot of stuff that I'm not into. I'm okay with that. The world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some.
Only thing left here to cover, I guess, is one of the toughest days, weeks coming up in sports is that the roster cuts will begin next Tuesday, September 1st. The deadline is 2 p.m. Mountain Time, 4 p.m. Eastern. Getting down to 75 players on this first one, and then eventually down to 53 following the last preseason game. You know, it's never fun for anyone. These coaches have gotten to know a lot of these players on a very personal level, and it's never an easy time to tell someone this isn't your time. Mm-hmm. This isn't, you know. It's just not happening right now.
There's actually a very fascinating story on Bleacher Report. The former general manager of the Broncos, Ted Sundquist, writes about what that experience is like and how players, based on their own experiences, handle it in different ways. And then there's a twist at the end of the story, and I advise everyone to go on to Bleacher Report, look up Ted Sundquist, and find this story. It's really good. I don't want to spoil the ending of it. You know, you may see it coming, or perhaps you won't, the way he writes it, but it's a really just a good insight on how different players deal with it in different ways, but also just how painful the process is. I mean, obviously, if you watch Hard Knocks, you see it there, too. Although Hard Knocks certainly, like, for dramatic effect, kind of sets it up. Like, they open this week's show talking about a player, and the next thing you know, he's being called in and being cut. A player that they hadn't mentioned on the show to that point. So, you know, it's hard. It's the worst week of the year on the NFL calendar by far. Nothing comes close. You know, it's tough because, you know, even we see these guys around the building. We see them at the Chow Hall, you know. We say hi to them, talk to them about their stories and all that. And, you know, it's really sad. You wish you could keep them all, but it's not the rules.
Yep. And I guess the other kind of side of it is that you have to have the confidence in yourself to be the next Brandon Marshall or whoever moves on to a new spot and finds a fit and finds, you know, their career.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting to note, this is, you know, getting away from the emotional side of it, Brandon McManus made a very interesting point to me this week, and he talked about how when he was cut, he was actually cut at the first cut, down to 75, not the one to 53. And he said it was because you need those extra offensive linemen to get through the preseason finale, which is true. You like to have, ideally, a couple of units, all backups if you're a team that doesn't play its starters at all in the preseason finale. You need those guys to get through that game, and oftentimes it's not that the 75 who stay are necessarily the best 75, but it's about being able to get through that game without using your starters. So there's some interesting factors that go into play with it. We'll see, but it's gonna be a tough week.
Yeah, but we'll be getting closer to our regular season opener, another week closer. And man, that's a tough note to leave this podcast on, but
we can't really bring it back from there. I mean, if we go in another direction, it seems like you're downplaying it, and I don't want to downplay. I mean, it's sad. I mean, think about just having a dream for your entire life, and it may not be dead, but certainly it takes a hit.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's hard. And the thing is, there's a new crop of players that comes in every year, right behind you. The flow of talent never stops. So, you know, unfortunately, there are some guys who are going to get cut who won't be in an NFL camp again. That's the reality of it. And that makes me sad.
I guess the lesson of it is that you know, for fans, you got to kind of treat these people as more than just a football commodity, the human value in it. So always important to kind of remember that and kind of take that as people do in their NFL fandom or any sports, really. But yeah, so we'll end the podcast here, and we'll catch you all in a week as we get closer to the regular season.